it's getting more and more frustrating. Like, the league around the Knicks is operating. The Celtics are making trades. The Nets are making trades. The Atlanta Hawks are making trades. There's things that are going on. The draft is tonight.
Yes. I'm just wondering, like, people just don't like Porzingis or what? And this guy gets traded, you know, he gets traded more than Kevin Durant.
Yeah. Well, Kevin Durant wants to get traded. I don't know. I mean, Kristaps did want out of the Knicks and his pain in the ass brother and all that stuff. I don't know. I mean, I feel like with Kristaps, it was a couple of things. One, you mentioned with the money, and also, you know, they got, he fit perfectly for that year. They win a championship. Some weird illness happens with him this year. Obviously, they got to do some salary cap maneuvering, and he was an easy one to move on from.
I don't know that much about the trade between, you know, them and Atlanta, but it was Atlanta, right? Is that who they traded with?
Yeah, he's, a, right, he's right. On so, Atlanta now. And the Nets.
Right, so, but all I do know is that Jrue Holiday and Porzingis were a pain in the ass for the Knicks.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, like, things are rapidly changing. You know, around the Knicks, like I feel like it's positive, you know, and I don't even talk about the injuries that have happened to the significant players in the Eastern Conference, but it's a part of the story. But, you know, the Celtics now are starting to, their new ownership realizes that they're going to be paying some big money to some players here.
Yeah. I mean, and so this is what the Knicks, of course, have interviewed Jenkins, have interviewed Mike Brown, and now they're interviewing Micah Norry, who is a Timberwolves assistant. And Jerry played some cuts from him because he's one of the guys that gets interviewed during the games instead of the head coach. And he's a Southern guy who actually uses phrases like watertight, like a frog's butthole. Like Jerry played a whole bunch of stuff yesterday.
Yes.
And he was like, I'm praying. Jerry said, I'm praying to the sports gods that the Knicks hire this guy because of the stuff he was saying. You know, he was like, man, I tell you, that pick and roll is not working. It's like boobs on a bull. What's the point? You know, it's like, what? Well, maybe
he had a good relationship with Carl Anthony Towns when Carl Anthony Towns was there. And maybe Carl Anthony Towns, his agent, and Leon Rose are speaking about, you know, coaches that Carl Anthony Towns likes, maybe?
Yeah, so he got there in 2021. So, yeah, he did spend a couple years with him as the lead assistant. So, is Carl Anthony Towns dictating everything that's going on in the organization?
I don't know.
Now?
You know, you wouldn't think so because of the way that he comes off in interviews and the way that he talks and some of the things that he says. You would think that, you know, he wouldn't have or be that kind of guy pushing.
But this is what it is, though. You're right. It's not him. It's the people who were infatuated with him, had to get him here, and needed to work because their reputation is on the line because of it.
Well, it did work.
Needed to work for as far as a championship because it didn't work in their eyes because they fired the coach after making it to the Eastern Conference Finals.
But what I'm saying is that they had a successful year, and he had a very successful year for the Knicks. He did.
But they're thinking bigger now, as they should. So, and they need to get more out of him, and they should.
So, therefore, go get a guy that he is comfortable with and he likes to work with, and maybe that guy can, you know, create an offensive system that, you know, he'll be able to get more out of. I don't know. How much more do you want from Carl Anthony Towns?
Well, I mean, we talked about at the end of the season. What you need is more consistency, not sloppy fouls, getting back on defense, you know, like those things. Being a bully in the paint offensively as opposed to just standing behind the three-point arc and chucking it up. We know the things. We're like a few weeks removed now from it, but yes. We all remember what the things we needed from him were.
And watching OKC, especially in Game 7, I don't know if you noticed this or not, any shot that was hit by OKC, there was no celebrating. It was all get back on defense.
No, that's why they're the best defensive team in the league.
You know, nobody was flexing after a dunk like, yep. And then the guy that he's covering is like 20 feet past him already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's none of that crap going on.
Yep.
So I don't know. I don't think Carl Anthony Towns is going to change all that much. But if you're going to hire a coach, you better hire a coach that, you know, can keep him somewhat happy and somewhat engaged and hopefully get a little bit better of a year that you got out of him from this year. You got an all-star year out of him this year. And they were good. They went all the way to the conference final. They should be able to take the next step. But unlike the Pacers, they're going to have to do it with another coach, not with the same coach that went to the Eastern Conference Finals last year and then took his team to the finals this year and unfortunately lost his best player in Game 7.
Yeah, and I think that once we see Jason Kidd doing interviews tonight talking about Cooper Flagg being on his team, you can officially close the door on that dream happening. I know it's sort of on life support and people think that the Knicks could still take that big swing, but once you get Jason Kidd out there saying, oh, I got Cooper Flagg now, and obviously we hope Anthony Davis is healthy and Kyrie and the extension, and here we go, blah, blah, blah. We're in the finals a couple years ago. We're going to try to get back there, then forget about it. Then his extension comes and bang. So it's going to be, you know, unless there's some other assistant out there we don't know about. You got those three candidates right now, Mike Brown, Mike Inouye, and Taylor Jenkins.
And for us locally, I guess, you know, Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey are the two guys that Dylan Harper seems to be trending as the number two overall pick. And Ace Bailey has fallen a little bit.
Well, he's fallen because he didn't want to take a meeting with the 76ers. He wasn't going to do a workout for them or anything. So I think he wants to be either in, I guess, Utah, Washington, or New Orleans.
Oh,
I don't know.
God.
Well, I mean, I don't know what to say. He doesn't want to be.
I would think he'd want to be with the Nets, maybe.
Yeah, that, I mean, the Nets, I can understand, but that's all the way down at 8. You know? I mean, does he want to fall all the way to 8? Why would you not want to be on the 76ers?
Well, the big question would be, are there any trades? You know, are there any trades out of, like, does San Antonio really want Ace Bailey? Does Philadelphia want, you know, Knipple? Is it Knipple from Duke? Knipple? Knipple? I don't know. What is it?
You're asking the wrong guy, but I like Knipple. That sounds good to me. Let's go with that.
I knew you would love that.
Yeah.
I knew you would love that.
Knipple! But yeah.
But you look at these teams at the top of this draft, it's like, oh.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You know, it always is that way.
But you know what? Not so much. Like, well, the Spurs, though, like with Wembanyama, they definitely have a future. The Sixers had a miserable year. You know, it's more like the Hornets, the Jazz, the Wizards, the Pelicans. But the Mavericks, I mean, you know, the Mavericks were in the finals 2 years ago.
I know. I kind of feel like, well, and now they're getting the number one pick. And, you know, out of Kyrie's not going to be back.
Kyrie?
Maybe he won't be back until maybe February.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. But, yeah, it's going to be a while. But
and he's signing a three-year contract extension. So
$108 million.
So another team paying a guy not to play.
Yep, that's right. Man, he's found a way to do that. Him and Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant obviously gets traded as well again. So other teams are making moves and the Knicks are hanging around.
Do you think
hanging around?
San Antonio's got two first round picks. They're number two and I think they're number 14.
Okay.
Could they trade those to Milwaukee for Giannis?
Yeah. They could, if that's what they want.
Then you got Giannis and Wembanyama. How would they play together?
I don't know. Let me call Tibbs. I don't know. He's got nothing to do. He could break it down. I mean, I'm sure, you know, talent like that, you could figure it out. But, yeah, and obviously them being in the Western Conference, it makes it easier for Milwaukee to want to trade him there. And the Rockets now getting Kevin Durant takes them out of it because that was one of the destinations. So, yeah, could be a possibility.
You see where Miami was all in. Trying to get Kevin Durant. They couldn't get him.
Yeah.
That Pat Riley, he ain't sitting still down there.
Like Leon Rose.
Well, I mean, Leon's doing things. Don't know what he's doing because he never talks to anybody.
What are you doing, Leon Rose?
I never know what they're doing. The Alvarez thing, I was 100%. You got to get him out of here. He was swinging for the fences, couldn't hit anything, was playing terrible behind the plate. It's time to send him down and get him to grow up. So I was, that was all about, you know, trying to make the Mets better and hopefully making him better. So when he does come back later on in the year, he'll have more of an impact like he did when he was a rookie. And it's unfortunate, but, you know, you can't keep watching the same thing over and over and over again and think that it's going to change. So you got to get his confidence back. His confidence is in the toilet, but you also got to give him a little bit of a wake-up call. So that's why I felt like, you know, this would be the right time to send him down. So the Mets did the right thing there as far as I'm concerned. As far as Tyrese Haliburton is concerned, you know, folks got to understand, like, this is why your favorite athlete, when they strain a calf, is out for 2 months. Like, he didn't have 2 months. He did like Kevin Durant. He wanted to play. He wanted to be a part of his team. He wanted to be out there. And obviously, just like how Kevin Durant got hurt, he had actually started the game great, 3-for-3, hitting bombs. And then all of a sudden, you could see that Achilles just ruptured, just like it did for Aaron Rodgers. Remember, you saw it looked like it was like an electric shock through the lower leg?
Yep.
That's exactly what it looked like. And I don't like being right about those things, but I also know that these things happen quite often, and this is why the calf injury in today's athlete, for whatever reason, is so concerning, because you want to protect that Achilles and you want to make sure that your calf is 100%. And give him a lot of credit, because he played through it. They managed it. And then, unfortunately, last night, it came to fruition. So I don't get any joy out of it. I'm just pointing out something that, I mean, I think we should all be aware of, because we're all sports fans and we all watch different athletes go through this. And it's just amazing how, once you hear calf strain, what's coming next, if they continue to play through it, is going to be the Achilles.
Yeah, and we knew he had to continue to play through it, and I'm sure that there was no conversation about it. Like, we have to, this is the NBA Finals, and it's Game 7, and we're playing through this thing, and that's three stars in the Eastern Conference playoffs that ruptured their Achilles this postseason. Damian Lillard, Jason Tatum, and Tyrese Halliburton.
And the thing, I would imagine that our buddy Marty O'Malley got a call last night.
Yeah, maybe.
And I would
think
that Tyrese would be on his way here for the hospital special surgery for Marty to take care of him, much like he took care of Jason Tatum, much like he took care of Kevin Durant. He took care of my son-in-law, Matt Martin, when he had an ankle issue. Took care of my CEO, Bob Plansker, when he had an ankle issue.
Wow.
I mean,
I almost want an injury so I can go to Dr. O'Malley, well, so be in good company, you know?
You know, the thing is that they're learning, you know, get in there immediately, get it together, and then you're going to have to sit out for about 6 months to 8 months, depending on, you know, how you heal, and then you got to come back somewhat slowly. As we saw, that Kevin Durant basically sat out an entire year.
Yeah, well, he did.
And I would think that...
Not basically.
Jason Tatum may come back, you know, maybe next January or February, if he heals well and he does good in the rehab, then maybe he'll come back a little bit earlier than that. But I would say that Tyrese Halliburton's most likely out for the year.
Yeah, and the Nets were, it was the bubble year, right, that happened. So they did make the postseason in the bubble.
But remember, Kyrie Irving
didn't want to play. And there was no way that Kevin Durant was coming back in that situation. I remember the talk being that there could be a chance that he could. So, you know, maybe with Halliburton, he has a great recovery and he can come back for the postseason, but I would be surprised if you saw him at all during the regular season.
I mean, he's not going to... So, we're in June right now, so...
Late June, by the way, so, the 23rd.
Yeah, I mean, so you got to give him at least 8 months to 12 months. Now, there may be some newfangled therapy that they're going through and they're finding success with it, but man, you just got to make sure that thing is right, that it's tight, that it's, you know, that you don't stretch it and you have it loosen on you. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into this. It's just not easy to overcome something like this. So, and you got to be diligent when you're a player that you basically leave that foot in that boot or that cast so that doesn't move.
Yeah.
It's a rough thing to come back from.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's becoming basketball's Tommy John.
Well, and how about the NFL's torn ACLs?
Yeah.
I mean, that's another one. So, but yeah, and unfortunately, three stars and all in the East. And if you're a Knicks fan, that's something that's on your mind. It just is, because you've got two teams, one of which that you couldn't beat in the regular season, but you beat in the postseason. Another team you haven't been able to beat in the postseason, losing their top players long period of time. So
the Knicks are going to go without a coach, by the way.
Player coach? Jalen Brunson?
No coach at all. Brunson? No coach at all. Nobody's going to, nothing. Just let them go play ball.
Yeah. Well, we know that they're going to hire somebody at some point, but there's no doubt.
They probably still have their eye on Jason Kidd.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it feels like, and they're going to exhaust every option until, I guess, the Mavericks give him some giant extension that he can't turn down.
So, the amazing thing is that Fanatics Fest was incredible this weekend.
Yeah.
And one of the incredible things that happened is Kevin Durant's up there with Kay Adams.
He's up there with Taylor Rooks.
Taylor Rooks. And he's up there, and he's giving an interview, and then he can hear the fans yelling, "You just got traded to Houston!"
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah, now he knew, if you listen, so the Kay Adams interview happened after this, and he knew it was going to happen. He didn't know exactly when it was going to happen, so when people were yelling at him, that was news to him that it had gone down, but he flat out said that he told them where he wanted to go, and he dictated this trade, and he knew it was going to happen.
Not surprising, right?
So, I mean, no, not surprising at all, but I just, the conversation around the, oh my God, Kevin Durant's at Fanatics Fest, and he found out he got traded to the Rockets. Oh my goodness. Like, he knew it was happening probably a week ago. So, and he didn't know, like, when the news was going to break, but it broke while he was up there on stage, and they gave up a lot for an older player, the Houston Rockets.
With 1 year remaining on his contract.
Exactly. So they are pushing all their chips in the middle of the table to try to get after it and win one in the next couple of years. So
I mean, so do you think, like, what the Knicks gave up for Mikal Bridges compared to what Kevin Durant went for from Houston?
Well, I mean, this haul is much greater than that, but Kevin Durant's also a better player than Mikal Bridges.
Yeah,
but he's towards the end of his career.
Five teams in 9 years?
Yeah, I mean...
There's something there, man.
Well, of course, and that's why I didn't want him on the Knicks at all. I mean, we talked about this. I think that he's towards the end. And I think there's also this aura around Kevin Durant. Like, the Knicks clearly still were interested in him and wanted him. And I don't think he's going to be the guy to put you over the top. He clearly wasn't in Brooklyn. He wasn't in Phoenix. I don't think he's going to be in Houston. And when you give up, you know, two players, like players that people know that got minutes, the 10th overall pick and 5 second round picks, I mean, you'd be thinking you're getting Kevin Durant when he's 28 years old.
Yep.
And you're not. So,
but I don't know, for Houston and the team that they have and the fact they were able to keep that collection of players together, I was reading about an article about just how big this team is going to be, like physically big.
Yeah.
I think they have five guys that'll be on the floor at one time starting a game, all like 6'11 or taller, or 6'10 and taller.
Yeah.
Home, and they can all run and jump out of the gym. I mean, you know, so there'll be a force. There's no question about it. I just don't know. Does he have that burning desire that he had when he was younger, you know, where everything came easy to him? And he's still an amazing basketball player, but I just don't know if he has that drive that it's required. Like, watching these games last night or this game last night, you know, it's a young man's game, man.
Oh, of course. I mean, you think about Oklahoma City Thunder. I mean, I saw Scott Van Pelt interviewing SGA, so SVP interviewing SGA, and he said, like, can most of your team actually drink tonight? Because I don't know if you're all over 21, and that's how young and the Oklahoma City Thunder were and are, and they won an NBA championship. So there's no doubt about it, and that's why you feel like this window for the Knicks is also, you know, closing, because it's not like every player that they have is the 22, 23 years old. They got young players and they got guys who have experience. They're not too old yet, but, you know, it's got to happen in the next couple of years. And maybe that pressure led to this Thibodeau decision.
And also the fact that you brought up that there are three main players in the Eastern Conference that would have stood in the way of the Knicks trying to get back to the conference championship. And all three of those players are not going to be back next year.
Yeah, now they may be back for the postseason. You might get Tatum back for the postseason. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, as far as what the Knicks are trying to do and during a regular season, it doesn't mean that the Knicks are going to be injury-proof. I mean, that's the other thing in this conversation that I heard other people having was like, oh, man, you know, all these guys are going to be hurt and the Knicks are going to be sitting pretty. I mean, well, the Knicks do have the ability to get hurt themselves.
Oh, yeah, well, we've seen before.
Right, let's not pretend like that's not a possibility as well, unfortunately, because that's just the nature of the game. But, yes, I mean, the way if think about the way we'd be thinking about the Knicks this morning if they hadn't fired their coach after making it to Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals.
We'd be thinking, okay, they're ready to rock and roll now.
Yeah, like this is it.
And they're going to add a piece or two here or there.
2025 NFL Head Coach Hot Seat Rankings. Hot Seat Rankings.
Now, Mike Tomlin.
Okay, so this is what I was going to do. I want to see your five and see if your five match their five.
Okay.
And if you agree or not. So you put Tomlin on there. All right. So you got Tomlin on your five. Mike Tomlin.
Mike McDaniel.
Mike McDaniel, number two. Okay. And you can rank these when you're done, if you'd like, because they have theirs ranked.
Okay.
So we got Tomlin, McDaniel. Hot seat rankings. Hot seat rankings.
Okay. Let's see. I don't believe any of the new coaches are on the hot seat just yet. So we have to go.
Boom, pause.
They're going to put Schottenheimer on there. That maybe he's a new coach, but I wouldn't put him on there.
No, don't. First year guy. There's no first year guys on here.
Okay,
but these are yours. They're not theirs.
Oh,
these are
I yours. See. But you're trying to get me to.
I'm just curious to see if you agree. with them without me telling you what it is and you going, I agree or disagree. I just want to see how it matches up. Just curious.
Okay.
Just curious, that's all.
Oh, let's see.
Well, you're missing
where
a,
else?
You're missing a big one.
It's Brian Daboll.
There you go. Yep. You got three.
That's three.
Two more. And I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that you're matching each of these up. But
I would say Kevin Stefanski.
Stefanski. All right. So you need one more to see if they match up. These are the 2025 NFL coaches hot seat rankings.
And I'll say. I will say. I will say.
I will. I will. I will. Boom. Boom. Bum. Boom. Ba. Boom. Pause. Hot seat rankings, NFL head coach, boom pause, hot seat rankings, one more. He's got four.
Jonathan Gannon.
Jonathan Gannon. Okay, so would you like to rank these 1 to 5? Tomlin, McDaniel, Daboll, Stefanski, Gannon. Which one's on the hottest seat?
Daboll's one.
Daboll's one.
McDaniel's two.
Two. You got Stefanski, Gannon, Tomlin.
Stefanski, three.
Okay.
Tomlin, four.
Okay.
And Gannon, five.
Okay. So, you match up with CBSSports.com on the first two. You've nailed the first two. Brian Daboll, number one on the hot seat. They also have a prediction of if they get fired or not. We could do that at the end if you'd like. So, Brian Daboll, number one on the hot seat. You also have Daboll, number one on the hot seat. Their prediction is fired.
I'm going to say not fired.
Okay. Number two, in lockstep, you and CBS Sports. Like you are for many years. Mike McDaniel, number two of the Miami Dolphins. Their prediction? Fired.
I agree.
Number three, you had Kevin Stefanski. CBS Sports says, right division, wrong team. Zach Taylor.
I don't think Zach Taylor's going anywhere.
Zach Taylor.
Yeah, because their defense is going to be really, really struggling this year. And all those offensive players, and Joe Burrow seems to really like Zach Taylor. I was thinking about him, but I just think that I don't know what his contract status is. That would, if they have 3 years, if he has 3 years left on his contract,
the Bengals aren't doing that.
Nah, right.
All right. So their prediction for Zach Taylor is fired.
Oof. So that means they're not counting on the Bengals making the playoffs.
That is correct. So,
and I like Zach Taylor. I really do. I just think, you know, when you go to Cincinnati, they just don't fire people. You know, they held on to Marvin Lewis for 15 years.
Mm.
You know, Sam Weish was there for 7 years, and he kind of clumsily ended up walking out on them.
Yeah, clumsily is a good way of putting it. So, number four, speaking of not firing coaches, you've got Mike Tomlin. I disagree. I don't think the Steelers would ever fire Mike Tomlin unless there was some sort of scandal that was going on. I think that he would either step away.
What, is he on the list?
He's not on the list, and I don't.
So he's not a hot seat coach right now,
according to CBSSports.com. But I could see why. Like if you told me argue why Mike Tomlin is a hot seat coach, I could. But I don't believe that the Steelers would.
I'm telling you right now, if this whole thing with Aaron Rodgers doesn't at least get them to the playoffs,
yeah,
I believe that the Pittsburgh Steeler fan is going to blame Mike Tomlin.
Well, they have.
That's what, you know, and
but they have.
I know they
many
have.
Many years.
I know they have, and I think that they've had enough.
But the fans aren't hiring the coach.
I know that, and the Steelers, much like the Bengals, are very patient, and they give their coaches, you know, they'll give them time, and they're not going to be swayed by the fan base. But I if they don't win this year, at least get to the playoffs, and Aaron plays good, and they look like they have an offense. I could just see, you know, the fan base being so incensed that they would have to do something.
So number four on the CBSSports.com list is Shane Steichen of the Indianapolis Colts.
Which is his third year now. And
yes.
And, well, you also remember, too, they lost their owner.
17-17 over the first 2 years.
Yeah, and they gave him Anthony Richardson. He didn't pick Anthony Richardson. Chris Ballard did.
Their prediction for Steichen? Fired.
Yeah.
Okay.
And by the way, a new owner, like, you know, his Jim Irsay's daughter is taking over now. So that could play into all of this.
Now, you had number five, Jonathan Gannon of the Cardinals. Their number five might be clickbait, and it worked. But I disagree. They're number five, Sean McDermott of the Bills. Hot seat. Hot seat guy, they're saying. Sean McDermott.
I would say this. That would be one of the dumbest moves ever made in the NFL.
Wow. Yeah. I feel maybe not as strongly. The Browns make a lot of dumb moves. That was probably the Deshaun Watson one, which is the dumbest move ever.
Yeah, and, and by the way, that Deshaun Watson move may end up costing the NFL a lot of money if this collusion case gets moved forward, because that was the impetus to all of it. And I told you that was going to reverberate around the NFL. And it certainly has, and it may end up turning out to really, really financially hurt the NFL.
Yeah. Not fired is their prediction, by the way. Not fired with Sean McDermott, but they do have him on the hot seat.
Yeah, I mean, all these coaches are on the hot seat, and they want to see how these teams play. And Sean McDermott is a terrific coach, and he's got a great quarterback, and they've played really, really well together. They go to the playoffs every year, and it's not easy to win, You are in the era of Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson. I mean, think about the quarterbacks that you have to play against in your own conference.
Yeah, and the point that they're making is sort of like a Nick-like scenario, where is this the guy to get us to the next level during our window?
But totally different when it comes to football and it comes to football systems. And, getting to know each other. I mean, I think that these guys are so good, just like Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are so good together. And I would say the same thing for Mike Shanahan and Brock Purdy. Like, they all know each other so well that to try to rekindle that with somebody new, when you have these guys that have put up these huge numbers with these play callers and head coaches on the sideline, why in the F would you want to screw that up?
Yeah. I don't know, but they do predict that he's not fired, but they do have him on the hot seat.
And those teams I'm just talking about, the thing about those teams that I like is that I do believe that ownership, I hope, ownership wants to stay stable, does not want to have to restart over again with a whole new coaching staff. And that's a pain in the ass.
Yes, it absolutely is.
It is the Jets do it every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it's about every three.
And the Giants, too, for that matter.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's been really remarkable, the turnover that we've had here with those
two things. I will say this. Now we're talking about football here for a second.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like both the Jets and the Giants are really, really competitive in practice. And that, I do love that.
Okay.
I do love that. That's a big thing. And that's going to be a reoccurring theme, especially for the Jets. Because the Jets are going to try to rant, He's got a year to ramp it up. You know what I mean? Like, he can get away with losing some games this year. But as long as his team is tougher, more competitive, and is going to be, is going to be turning into an edgier team, a more competitive team, I think, certainly that will show progress from the Jet fan perspective.
As a New York fan, I think we're always kind of looking for that next, all right, well, if this is done, what else can we look forward to? And right. I think, for me, I think Aaron Judge has been just the one consistent, this guy. I mean, he's given New York a lot. The Yankees, it's been incredible to watch. But the other thing, too, Gio, and this may be a hot take, though.
You got hot takes?
I might have a hot take.
Yeah.
I am so excited for the Giants.
Really?
Wow.
That is a hot take.
No, it is a hot take. And I'll tell you why. And you know what? I'm just also going to say, I do this every year.
Okay. All right.
But this, I also say this every year. This year feels a little bit different. Like, I always was a fan. I'm a Daboll guy.
Mm-hmm.
I always trusted Daboll. Yeah. I think he's great. I think that they made a lot of, I think the worst thing that the Giants could have done was go on that Hard Knocks season.
Because
think it opened up what was going on behind the scenes. And mm-hmm. I think it really put things into perspective. But now they make these moves in the draft. They got veteran QBs. They got, it seems like, and listen, take it with a grain of salt, what Russell Wilson said the other day about them being, the camaraderie being incredible. I kind of believe him.
He says that everywhere he goes.
I know,
I don't want to rain on your parade and Giants fans They're always on me for being too negative, but they've been so bad, and I really want them.
No, they have been.
I mean, and trust me, I want them to do well. Like, all the Giants fans are like, oh, because you're a Vikings fan, you only care, you want to see the Giants lose. That's not the case. I can't deal with this anymore, these two teams losing, so I want them to do well. But the problem with the Giants is, even if you're excited about the roster, you look at the division and their schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to take some major overachieving just to get to six wins.
Yeah. I think for me, as a Giant fan, as a lifelong Giant fan, what would satisfy me is to have somewhat of like a respectable season.
Yeah.
Because last season, you watch that and you're like, this is not even football.
Yeah.
It's excruciating to watch.
Well, especially when you look at the rest of the league. So if you're like, you're betting on games, you're playing fantasy football, and you have an eye on these other games, and you watch, you know, Josh Allen against Justin Herbert or something, it looks like they're playing a different sport.
I think...
Look at this schedule, man.
No, I know.
I mean, look at this.
I know.
I mean, the Commanders aren't a pushover anymore.
Well, I was going to say, the Commanders are they're a great football team, too. But I do think that what they got going on, like, look at Dable. You see Dable just waving his finger around over
there? Yeah, listen, I like him a lot.
I really think that they're finally coming to fruition. I may be the most wrong I've ever been.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like to, as a Giant fan, like, this is my favorite part of the season, because you can say all this stuff and they haven't played a single game.
Right, of course. And then if they're terrible, you're like, well, I was just going out on a limb. Right. We all knew they were going to be terrible.
Right.
So it's fine, and I'm a fan, and I want them to be good. I guess, so if you're John Mara, I think one of the big problems that happened at the end of the season was John Mara coming out and saying that I'm keeping Daboll and Shane, and I know it's an unpopular decision, and I better be happier next year at this time than I am right now.
Right.
Which was basically saying that these guys, you like, there's
when are you out?
Yeah, it's essentially an ultimatum, but I just wonder what that is. I understand what it looks like, and sometimes win totals aren't telling the whole story. But, like, if you're John Mara, what is the season that the minimal season that you need to have to keep them?
I think they've set the bar so low that I just think that any sort of good football, seriously, good football where, like, Giants fans are talking about the game. I mean, I wouldn't even flick on past the first quarter.
That's so
like, what I'm saying is, I think a successful season for the New York Giants is some sort of just string it together. Like, we may not go to the big game. Hopefully we're in playoff contention, but anything just beyond what we've been getting.
Yeah, just be competitive.
Just be competitive. And know that on Sunday, if I'm watching the game, it's going to be a game.
Yeah, it's sort of like, I know things went haywire with him in his second year, but like that first year of Joe Judge when they went 6-10, like they were 6-10. It was not a good season, but they looked different. They looked more competitive. Right. Now that thing fell apart really quick. But that's the type of season I could see. If it's a 6-win or a 7-win season, that's the season that I could see John Mara, even with that low win total, going, okay, you know, I feel like we're going in the right direction. But also, if Jackson Dart can get in to a few games towards the end of the season and looks good, that's going to help their case, too.
I like Dart. I like Dart, man.
I didn't love the pick. I felt like it was a bit of a reach, but I do. Like, there's, like, when Zach Wilson, I don't know if this means anything, but, you know, Jackson Dart went to the same high school as Zach Wilson, and that's a tough thing for me.
Yeah.
But I will say, when Zach Wilson came here, I mean, he looked like a child. Like, he looked like a little douchey child when he was with the Jets. Jackson Dart kind of looks like a young John Elway.
I think.
Like, he has that presence about him where he looks like a man already, which may mean nothing. But, like, I could never see Zach Wilson with that face and his haircut being a great quarterback. Like, when you see Joe Burrow, you're like, all right, that guy could be a great quarterback. Like,
he's Jackson, a baller.
Like, Jackson Dart, it looks like a man already. And not like these little kids. Like, even like Daniel Jones came into the league, he's just like, ooh, like, kind of doofy looking.
You know, but I think, I think, again, like, Dart fits, you know, like, he fits Dable. He fits that whole vibe. If you watch, like, the tapes on him talking to Dable when he was in those meetings, like, you could tell, and I agree with you, I think the level of maturity is huge. I mean, you think about it, it's a fast-paced, long-season, hard-nosed thing that they're doing. It's almost, I mean, I know, like, some of my friends that play in the league, they're like, we're going to war.
Yeah.
And that's a mentality. And I think Dart really possesses that. And then he has, I mean, say what you want about Winston and Russell Wilson, where they're at now, but those guys have seen some stuff. They've been involved in some big moments. So I'm, as a Giants fan, I'm the most optimistic I've ever been.
Yeah. You know the Mr. Unlimited clip with Russell Wilson, right?
Listen, man. That guy. I hope he takes us to the promised land.
But
let me tell you something. That guy is a walking meme.
Yeah, he really is.
I mean, the stuff that he said, I don't even know if he's serious.
I think he is. I think he's trying to be serious, but he also thinks he's funny, you know?
But like, that's the part where that really gets me.
Yeah, to be that out of touch.
Well, you know what? It's like, he's the type of guy, if like you say a joke, before you finish it, he laughs. And you know that he don't even understand.
You're right.
And listen, I've never met the guy.
On the shoulder. Yeah. Hey, man. Yeah, good
you
seeing
start
you.
Telling. You know what I mean?
I'm thinking about what my alter ego would be, and I think I have an alter ego. His name's Mr. Unlimited. Yeah, you got to be unlimited. You got to have a thought process of being unlimited.
Like, what even is that I just listened to?
No, it's so.
And then, but then, Gio, on top of that, you got Jameis Winston.
Oh yeah, but I mean, he is so entertaining.
I
and
love
funny.
Him,
and I don't know. Sometimes I feel weird about it because he was accused of some really horrible stuff at Florida State, and he never ended up getting criminal charges. But I mean, there was some bad things going on. But he's now turned himself into
that I didn't know.
One of the most one of the most
that I had no clue.
Yeah, entertaining guys in football. So I don't know. It's one of those things though that like Tyreek Hill had that horrible thing before he got drafted where, right. You know, there's sometimes, you know, I struggle with that from time to time with Jameis, but I mean, who he is right now and what he, you know, that's a long time ago. Who he is right now is one of the most entertaining players in professional sports.
Yeah, I totally agree. Have you seen him licking his hand?
Oh yeah, the eating a W.
Eating a W. Imagine being 6'9", 390 pounds.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jameis Winston's licking his fingers before the game.
You mentioned Dickey. Now, we're not talking about R.A. Dickey. We're talking about Love Lady. Here was Gary Cohen going through the whole thing on SNY last night.
Okay, so there was a controversy yesterday. Maybe controversy is too strong a word, but a misunderstanding. All of Richard Lovelady's friends call him Dickie.
Okay.
So when the Mets signed him and brought him to the big leagues yesterday, he consulted with the media relations staff, and they asked him, do you want to be known as Richard or Dickie?
All right, so the ball was in his court, clearly, and this is how he responded.
And so he said, well, everybody calls me Dickie. Call me Dickie. And so the Mets put out a press release saying they'd signed Dickie Lovelady.
Right.
And then there was a response online about the idea of Dickie Lovelady coming to the Mets.
And so, as you can imagine, he then thought better of it.
Richard was not anticipating that kind of reaction.
Really?
So he went back to the media relations staff and said, you guys can call me Dickie, but for
professional,
for informational purposes,
okay,
I'm just still going to be Richard.
Well, you know what he was last night? Sucky. Sucky Lovelady. And you can call him a lot of things if he's not going to pitch better than that. But so we will call him Richard. His friends will call him Dickie.
Dickie. I mean, I think we have to call him Dickie constantly now. We can't call him Richard.
He's going
to
be called Dickie something if he doesn't pitch well, as we know. And last night, the bullpen was bad. Clay Holmes.
Basically, welcome to New York. I don't mean the pitching. I mean the discussion that Gary had last night.
Yes.
This is what happens when you come here.
Yeah.
No question.
And I mentioned yesterday, you know, I did see a name worse than Dickie Lovelady, and unfortunately it was a, you know, Fordham women's basketball player.
Yes.
Who transferred to Fordham to be a part of the Lady Stags. Her name is Jalen Sackrider. So, Dickie's safe as far as the most unfortunate name goes in the local area. Because I think that the Sac Riders take that trophy. Boomer?
Big what? Sack?
Sports Minute?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, maybe.
It's Sackrider, too. It's not like...
Oh, wow, man. It's not Wrighter.
No, or Sacc. It's straight up Sackrider.
Sackrider. What was the... Nice and clean. What is her dad's name?
Sorry, that's LeVar. My bad. And LaMelo.
No, it's not Ball Sackrider. I don't know. I don't know her father's name.
I mean, that poor guy had to grow up with that name.
Let's just hope it's not Harry.
The Yankees also had a 3-0 lead last night. They were in Cincinnati. They gave it up and then took the lead on a wild pitch in the 11th, but then in the bottom half.
First pitch, line drive over Volpe's head into left center field. Tie ball game. Coming home is McClain, and De La Cruz thought the game was over. He was wandering off the second, looking like he was looking to go celebrate with somebody. Then it all of a sudden he snapped to and realized he is the winning run.
And he became indeed just that. And Gavin Lux, the game-winning RBI single, driving him home. And the Reds beat the Yankees 5-4 in 11. Here is Aaron Judge. The team is not playing well. They've lost 9 of 12. They don't win in extra innings. How do you fix this?
We got to play better. That's it. You know, we're not playing that great. We got to learn from it. We got to move on. We got to turn the page. We got to get to the next one. But you know, we got a lot of winners in this clubhouse. You guys know how to move on from tough stretches, and you know, we've done that before. Like I said, you guys asked us the same question last year, and we got to figure it out. It's on us.
Yeah, they're now 45-34. Their lead atop the AL East down to a game. Carlos Rodon, 6 scoreless innings. He allowed just 4 hits, 88 pitchers. He was pitches. He was tired and gassed, so that was he was done for the night. Now you also had Jazz Chisholm get tossed in this game in the 9th inning. There was a 2-0 pitch that clearly was low. He didn't like it. It was called a strike, and he continued to chirp and chirp as he went on to strike out in the at-bat. When they took the field, he kept barking at the umpire when he finally had enough and threw him out. This is just literally 3 seconds of Aaron Boone not happy with his player.
No, I don't want him getting tossed there. You know, I want me to get tossed there in those situations.
And he tried. He went out and defended him and kind of pushed him away, but Jazz did not let up. Now, the other part of this story and this game was Chase Burns making his major league debut for the Reds, and all he did was strike out the first 5 batters that he faced. Here was Reds manager Terry Francona. How about that?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I mean, I don't know if you guys noticed, but there was a couple small little adjustments I talked to him about after the... You know, we kind of watched for everything, and he didn't get too excited.
How about that for our
rookie? The Yankees have never seen him.
True. I mean, it's still a kid, though, going out there, and I don't know. Strikes out the side in the first inning.
Yankee fans are used to that. Like, who's this guy? And then next thing you know, he strikes out 5 in a row.
Bring you the Mike Francesa podcast. And this is just the beginning. You know, it's a nice little opening. It was a hot day, as we know. So the big fella needed to have a little refresher as he got started.
Let me take a drink for a second on this very, very warm day. I was just outside rewatering the flowers. Because it is that hot today. I mean, it is unbelievable. I watered them this morning because my wife's been away, and so I have to do the watering of the garden. And she told me to water it again today because it was that hot.
A lot of watering.
Going on. I think he's announcing he has to take a sip.
Hold on a second. I'm just very thirsty from this heat wave, so I got to take a sip because I was rewatering the plants. I had watered initially and then rewatered, and then she said water again. So I was out there watering again for the third time. So, and then it was so hot. So hold on. Let me take a... Just hold on a second. So, I mean, it is hot out there. So after I'm done with the podcast, I'm going to have a junkless bar. Which is delicious, and then go rewater again for the fourth time. It's that hot, folks. I mean, it's that hot. If you have plants, if you are someone who has, you know, if you're fortunate enough, and we have a lot of plants, we've got a lot of plants, a lot of flowers, hydrangeas, you know, all sorts of bushes, Leland cypress, green giant, and we have a lot of them. But if you're fortunate enough to have some plants and some flowers, you gotta go out there and water him again.
He's got a Leland cypress.
it's so, you know, I mean, and then the four or five people that live here that take care of in the shed and take care of the plants. We haven't put AC in there yet. We're gonna. So I sent them home and I said, I'll do it. I'll take care of it. And so they're not there any longer. So I'll reward them. No problem. I'll do it.
So now, Mike, kind of related as we get back to baseball. So you had the whole thing with Clark Schmidt over the weekend. I guess it was Saturday where he goes the 7 no-hit innings against Baltimore. And then he gets taken out because of pitch count and all of that. So there are some that did not agree with that. One notable Yankee fan here at the radio station is Sean Morash.
Clark Schmidt kind of got robbed. And before you interrupt, David Wells and David Cone won a bunch of rings here. They're immortalized for their perfect games. Jim Abbott has talked about forever for his no-hitter here. Doc Gooden, his no-hitter here. This is not on the road. This is at Yankee Stadium.
Now, he was annoyed that he wasn't given the opportunity to go back to out there in the eighth. Bring it back to Mike on his podcast yesterday.
Any clown, anybody... anywhere who thinks he should have pitched the eighth and ninth innings really should not only keep that to themselves, they shouldn't even be allowed to watch baseball the rest of the year. Are you out of your mind?
Mind? I mean, any clown out there who lives in Brightwaters, Long Island, who is pale and overweight and floats around in an above-ground pool and... is half a host, half a producer, and kind of has the head like a beluga whale. I mean, shut up. Hold on a second. I mean, let me take a drink here.
Hold on.
I mean, what an idiot. I don't know. And I'm just making that. I don't know if anybody is like that. I just feel like that's the type of person who would want him to finish the game. We're back.
Jesus.
Condolences to Crystal FC fans. Crystal Palace FC fans. Woody Johnson just bought a piece of your team. So, I don't know. Probably going to go south.
I mean, he bought about 45%.
That's a big stake, man.
Right. And Josh Harris is also a part owner of this club.
Oh, okay. He owns everything.
So it's in the Premier League and has something to do with UEFA. And they needed to get this other guy, John Texter, out. And they needed to get another money guy in. Woody brings, believe it or not, a reputation, obviously, of being a billionaire and having money and, you know, and being able to infuse some money into the club to make sure that they...
So he's spending time over there as the ambassador.
Yeah, exactly. So he'll, hopefully, his purchase will allow that team to grow and then stay in the Europa League, I guess. That's what I'm reading. I don't know.
Does this have anything to do with his future ownership of the Jets?
No.
Okay.
It's only I think it was only like 100 or maybe 200 million bucks.
Oh, only $200 million?
Yeah. He tried to buy Chelsea back in 2022.
Okay. Didn't work out.
Offered $2 billion
for that. Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
I think that other consortium got that.
The other consortium?
Yeah.
Man.
Well, I say they might have Man U. I'm not sure.
It's a lot of stuff. It just popped up this morning. It was news this morning.
But that guy, Mike Walter, or is it Mark Walter?
Mark Walter.
Mark Walter, is his growing empire is just...
Dodgers, just, Lakers.
Right.
Man, oh man.
Just keeps adding to Guggenheim Partners. That's the consortium.
The consortium.
I keep telling you about these consortiums.
They're out there. They're out there and they're not messing around. Mm-hmm. They're buying up everything.
And so I'm thinking, I wonder if a consortium's calling Jim Dolan.
Mm.
Maybe that's what they're waiting for.
Mm. Yeah. That would be nice, wouldn't it? Consortium comes in.
Yeah, Woody Johnson's not a spring chicken either. You know, he's 78 years old.
Is he?
You would think he'd be divesting out of some things.
That's what we saw with the Wilpons, right? Well, obviously, Fred, not Jeff, who was younger, but...
Yeah, you gotta worry about, estate taxes.
Let's go to Chris in Connecticut. What's going on, Chris?
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good, Chris. What's up?
Oh, God. So, I'm a first time, long time. I love the show. I'm a big Yankee Ranger, Giant fan. And when you guys were talking about this mascot, Dandy, I had to Google it because I'd never heard of anything like that before. And if you Google it, in the people also ask section on Google, you can click on the section, like what actually happened to Dandy, the Yankees mascot. And it says Dandy, the mascot, was sent back to Harrison and Erickson, where they destroyed Dandy using an industrial shredder, an act that the creators described as a terrible thing to have to do.
thought that was pretty funny.
Did they take the human out of it at least?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know.
Man, well, I mean, it was jarring to see that picture, Chris. I mean, I knew nothing about it. The fact that Eddie knew nothing about it is shocking to me because he was all over baseball back then.
Yeah.
But it's just wild.
It's interesting. A number of people posted to us on X that they should have a Dandy bobblehead night.
Yeah, bring back Dandy. I mean,
just for a bobblehead.
I mean, they had Costanza sleeping under the desk bobblehead. That's what they just advertised.
Yeah.
Go to Yankee Stadium.
What's old is new again.
George Costanza sleeping out of the under 80s. The desk. Join us on August 7th as we celebrate Julia Louis-Dreyfus as Elaine with a sponge-worthy bobblehead night. Is he sponge-worthy?
Let's go to Lee and Wayne. Lee, what's happening?
Hey, guys. So, had the pleasure of going to a Crystal Palace FC game like a year ago. What a great fan base. Nice people. I would analogize that team to like the Pittsburgh Pirates. Small, very friendly. It is an absolute shame that Woody Johnson is buying a part of that team.
But, yeah, but I think the fan base over there, believe it or not, doesn't look at it the way that we look at it here. They're looking at it as this is a bump in credibility because of Woody's ownership of the New York Jets, and that's exactly, it sounds like, what this club needed in order to stay in the Europa League.
Well, I got to tell you, I don't know, you know, a lot about over there, but, you know, they were welcoming. You got to have a meat pie and you know,
where was
beer.
It? Where is Crystal Palace?
It's a little bit south of London. You take a train about 20, 30 minutes south of London. You know, we were like fish out of water there. My wife and I and a couple fans on the train said, hey, come with us. We'll show you the secret route in. You know, they took us in. We met a lot of great people, got some great pictures. You know, during halftime, everybody parties a little bit. And afterwards, just the really, really nice people over there.
Yeah, you know, they're like a little quality afternoon at MetLife Stadium. You know, Jet fans taking in, you know, other teams' fans and showing them around.
Absolutely, yeah. This is what it's like over here.
That's why I'm a Giants fan. So Woody should not be buying a part of that team.
All right, very good, Lee. We appreciate that.
Again, I just think it's financially the credibility of being an NFL owner and getting involved with Josh Harris and a few of the other owners over there, you know, helps financial stability and I think reputation. And, of course, he was the, you know, as you said, you know, he's very familiar with London and Great Britain just simply because he was, you know, the city ambassador.
Yeah, I mean, there's two ways you could look at it. They're probably saying, okay, this guy owns an NFL team. It's got to be very successful. The valuation of that NFL team has got to be huge. He was the ambassador over here. Johnson & Johnson, a lot of money investing into the team. So maybe that going anywhere, maybe this would be a good thing. You know, here we're just like, this guy owns the Jets, man. You want no part of that.
Yeah, but it's interesting. Like, so you have Josh Harris, who owns the Commanders.
Yep.
And you have Woody Johnson, who owned the Jets, and now they both are partners. Well, they're partners anyway. All 32 ownership groups in the NFL are all partners, except for the days that they play each other.
Right.
You know, they're all building a brand and have built an incredible brand and been very successful with it. So you got Josh and you got, I don't know, you know, Woody's not going to be pulling the strings over there. I don't think it, maybe it is the majority stake. I'm not sure. But it is 45%.